and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to you, lurking conservatives. Good morning to you, Mark Riley.
Good morning to you, Mark Maron.
How's it going, man?
I'm looking at some dirty business.
What are you talking about? What
dirty,
are you talking
dirty,
about? What?
Dirty business.
What could possibly you be? Oh, you're talking about? Yeah, well, I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about,
don't you? We'll get to that in a second, I think.
Yeah, man. Well, look,
we'll tease the dirty business, my friend.
Yeah, we'll tease the dirty business, but this is some stuff I'm just in, you know, skimming the surface of right now. This is some really, really dirty, and I mean dirty business.
And it's not dirty in the fun way. Riley's been doing some investigating into what exactly it is that John Bolton, among other things, is guilty of. But before we get into that,
that's right.
Let's get into this. I did go to the Green Market. One of the lovely things about New York City, my friends,
yes,
if you live here in New York City, is on the, like, I think it's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and Saturday.
And Saturday, especially
You
Saturday.
Go down to Union Square here in Manhattan. And they have this lovely green market, and it's snap pea time, my friend.
Yeah.
If you like the sugar snap peas, I got them right here. You
They're
know
fresh,
why?
Too, man. They are
beautiful.
Certified fresh.
You feel good about eating green stuff in the morning.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's good for me. It's good for the body. It's good for the soul, right, Kalo? Come on, buddy. Where are the pretzels? What do you got? Where's my popcorn? When are you going to Costco again? I want another box of 300 packets of popcorn. When's that going to happen?
That'll happen soon. I do have some pretzels, and I have my cup of noodles. But I do enjoy the snap peas.
Well, have a snap pea. I brought them,
you know,
because I've decided to eat compulsively but do it in a healthy way.
That is very smart.
Only in New York can you eat compulsively and do it in a healthy way.
Is that true? I think you could. I think if you shop properly, you can do it other places.
Listen, you ever been to South Dakota?
South Dakota,
where the produce stand.
Have you ever been to South Dakota?
Yes,
twice. One time?
No, twice.
Oh, all right.
Out on an Indian reservation.
All right. Well, let's crunch some news here. A U.S. Air Force U-2 spy plane involved in a mission in Afghanistan crashed. Killing the pilot. This is a sad reminder, folks, that we are still at war with Afghanistan. If you forgot, we are still at war with Afghanistan. If you thought it was over, we are still at war with Afghanistan, as indicated severely by a battle between American security forces and the Taliban. Remember the Taliban, Riley?
Who?
Yes, the Taliban.
What?
Still at it.
I thought we got
still
rid of them.
The Taliban is still fighting.
Wow.
And apparently there was a battle, yesterday, the day before. It was probably the middle of the night. It's hard to tell with Afghanistan time. But within the last 48 hours, two American CH-47 helicopters were hit with small arms fire. One was forced down and repaired, while the other made it back to the base. And warplanes, you know, pounded a part of the mountains, a safe haven of insurgents, and killed 76 people. 12 security forces died, and 5 U.S. soldiers were injured. Fighting who, Riley?
Fighting the Taliban?
You know, folks, there's so much stuff. But what's really important is what happened to that girl in Aruba. I mean, come on, America. Wake up. What happened to that girl in Aruba? Have you heard anything?
I haven't heard
anything. I don't want to hear anything, Riley.
How much time is that girl in Georgia going to do the runaway bride? How much time?
I don't even care. I don't even know.
Where's Michael Jackson?
There's other things happening, my friends. Other things are happening. So dig this. Let's get into this North Korea thing. Now, North Korea, froze its nuclear weapons-related plutonium program back in 94, all right? Now, this is a second spurned deal. The Bush administration, two times, this time going back to all of last week, said, look, we're not going to get into talks with you, all right? This is a difficult story. It's not a difficult story, but in 2002... after being found out, apparently Kim Jong-il, or Kim Jong-2, as I like to call him, copped to and then denied a uranium-enriching program, right? Thus pissing off Bush and company, who then accused them of being untrustworthy. Now, two American Asia experts, a former U.S. ambassador to South Korea, Donald Gregg, and a former journalist, Don Oberdorfer, said they visited Pyongyang. After then, U.S.
Why you make it sound like an obscenity?
Pyongyang. I'm not. Right after this, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State James Kelly was there accusing them of pursuing a secret program of enriching uranium for nukes, and they had previously denied that. But what happened was Gregg and Oberdorfer claimed they were given a written personal message from Kim Jong II himself, Kim Jong-il.
Ilio.
Himself stating that if the U.S. recognized North Korea's sovereignty and provided a non-aggression assurances, quote, it is our view that we should be able to find a way to resolve the nuclear issue in compliance with the demands of a new century, end quote. This is 2002.
Yeah.
In the message, Il also promised, quote, if the U.S. makes a bold decision, we will respond accordingly. That's end quote. Now, that's fighting words. Now, that's 2002.
That's 2002, and what he was really doing was extending the North Korean version of a huge olive branch to the United States, saying, look, let's sit down, let's talk, let's deal on this. And, you know, the Bush administration was so busy doing other things that they sort of ignored and spurned this offer, which is why Kim Jong-il doesn't want to hear about the U.S. right now. But you know what? You mentioned a name a minute ago that we have to bookmark because we're going to talk about him later, Kelly.
It was Kelly. He did work for Bolton.
Yes, he did work
for
Bolton.
So John Bolton's underling, this guy James Kelly, was the guy that went to North Korea and said, you know, you guys are pissing us off. You're lying about your uranium, and we're not going to talk to you.
Yeah.
So these two guys, these two American Asia specialists, Greg and Oberdorfer, took this message to the White House from Kim Jong-il, reaching out to make some, to at least engage. But we were in the middle of ramping up for the pillaging of Iraq, so we couldn't really get into it then.
Yeah.
I don't know why I put myself into the collective we. I don't feel like I'm part of the collective we. So now last week, Kim Jong-il says he wants to rejoin Six Nation talks. But the neocon death cult says no talking until the nuclear issue is resolved. So, again, we're saying no to Korea. Now, the interesting thing is that they got most of their nukes. If they do have these nukes, see, they used to, back in the back in 2002, that was thought they only had maybe fuel for maybe two nukes. Now it's assumed that they have fuel for at least six and maybe even the six nuclear warheads. What does that mean? They got most of these nukes after George Bush named Korea part of the Axis of Evil. Yet, in spite of that, in spite of the plain fact that North Korea has gotten all their nukes with Bush in office and that Bush has had the past 4.5 years in office to deal with the situation in Korea, conservatives still say, but Clinton, you know, accused Clinton of appeasement, even though it was Bush who has refused to hold direct talks with North Korea for the past 2 years, and again, spurning Kim Jong-il last week.
Yeah, yeah.
Dig that, man.
More dirty business. This U2 thing, man. I remember when I was 9 years old, when a U2 got shot down, a guy named Francis Gary Powers was the pilot at the time. He was captured by, I believe, the Russians. And you know, I didn't know they still used the same planes.
I know. I remember when U2 released Sunday Buddy Sunday. And that's a different story. That was my lifetime. I'm sorry, old man.
Yes, thank you very much. This was before you were born, man.
No, I remember hearing about that.
Yeah.
It's part of history. I'm familiar with a little bit of it. I saw it on television once.
Well, remember something.
Yeah.
The U2 has only come up in the American public discourse three times in over almost 45 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Once in 1960 when Powers was shot down. Once in 1962 during the Cuban Missile Crisis when one was shot down over Cuba. And now this one. That's
mm-hmm.
the only time you hear about it because their whole missions are cloaked in secret. You know how high these things fly? 70,000 feet.
Man, that's high.
That is high. That's like in the outer atmosphere, I think, or something. I don't know. I don't want to misspeak about how far, but it's about twice as high as a normal commercial airliner.
So what's going on with your boy Bloomberg? It looks like he's like untouchable.
Yeah, well, see, this is one of those things, the New York media, you know, the polls, and the guy that does this latest poll,
mm-hmm.
Quinnipiac,
mm-hmm.
Mickey Carroll, is a friend of mine. I know him for a long, long
mm-hmm.
time. And it says right now that Bloomberg will gut like a fish any of his opponents should they win the Democratic nomination to run against him. That includes Fernando Ferrer, who's a perceived front runner, C. Virginia Fields, who you talked to at the Strand Bookstore.
Nice lady.
Gifford Miller, who we're going to talk to tomorrow, and Anthony Weiner, all the other candidates. He waxes all of them. And the thing is, everybody's scared to death of his money. I mean, this is a guy that's got unlimited funds.
Billions of dollars of his own money.
Yeah.
I hear he carries $1 billion with him in cash.
We'll have to ask him the next time.
Coming up next. What do you need? What do you need? A house? A car? You want that bridge? I can I'll buy it for you. But coming up next, we're going to mark the passing of a program. So stay with us. It's 15 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio. Good morning!
Delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
Now, 800-337-0447. 800-337-0447. 800-337-0447.
Nineteen past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Yep.
Dearly beloved, we are here to mourn the passing of the Bush Social Security Plan. It has been ill for months, so it was no surprise. It was bound to happen, and after yesterday's announcement of a new irrelevant Social Security Plan presented by some key Republican members of the House, has become clear that Bush's Social Security plan is no longer with us and will no longer need Social Security, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, to conservatives, this is a sad day, but to Democrats and to us, it's a day of victory. He couldn't sell it to the American people because the American people smell the rat, and they're smelling one even more, Riley.
Yes,
even
they
more.
Are.
Freaked out Republicans regrouped at the White House on Tuesday to ask Bush, what the do we do now, man? What the have you gotten us into, you hole? That's right. On Tuesday, for the first time since the Reagan administration, the Senate Republican caucus held a policy luncheon at the White House, or should we say lack of or failing policy luncheon.
Yeah.
Given that the public, the Democratic leadership, and some GOP leaders are turning against the neocon death cult on Social Security, Iraq, and John Bolton, it has become clear that the neocons are just a cabal of greed that has no real concern for the working people of this country or the world. And now the Repubs want to know what the do we do with midterms coming up, man?
Well, you know what? You know what's funny? Norm Coleman,
yeah,
a senator from Minnesota,
mm-hmm,
says that this is a luncheon was to, quote, fire up the troops before the next big recess. You notice that these senators seem to be living from recess to recess? It's like, oh, okay, we got to do this before the next recess. Uh-oh, we got to fire up the troops before the next recess. What are we going to take home to our constituents during the next recess?
Absolutely. And the thing is like, now, I don't love to quote Thomas Friedman, have problems with Thomas Friedman, but he hit it in this column that came out yesterday, June 22nd. And he's talking about the Bush administration and their liabilities is that he basically says that one of the big problems, and there's many big problems, but one of the problems that I'm happy about is there's no vision because these guys really don't care, Riley. Dick Cheney is not going to run for re-election. The neocon death cult is turning out to be, as I said, just a cabal of greed that seems to not really care. And on some level, I think when you look at, when you see Iraq and you see some of the legislation they pushed through in terms of tort legislation and in terms of bankruptcy legislation, they're going to cut and run. They're making a fortune for their corporate friends and themselves. And basically what Friedman is saying in this column is that because Dick Cheney's not running and because George Bush is so short-sighted, they're in trouble, which is great news for us. He talks about the spending and tax cutting by the Bush team is ridiculously out of control. It will be a miracle if there's no market-induced implosion in the economy or the housing market in the next 3 years. But you can bet the farm there will have to be a huge correction after 2008 to get taxes and spending back in line. This is from Thomas Friedman. And if I can quote one more thing, he basically says, quote, to travel around America today is to find a country also deeply concerned about education, competition, health care, and pension. It is a country worried about how its kids are going to find jobs, retire, and take care of elderly parents. But instead of focusing on a new deal to address the insecurities of the age of globalization, the president set off on his second term to take apart the old New Deal, trying to privatize Social Security, only feeding people's anxiety. It won't fly, end quote. That's Thomas Friedman.
Oh, yeah. And what he's saying is that Bush has focused his entire attention to burnishing his legacy. He doesn't have a successor. There's nobody in the hopper waiting to run for 2008 that seems to have the White House's favor. So he doesn't seem to have, other than catering to James Dobsons and Tony Perkinses of the world, he doesn't seem to have, as Thomas Friedman calls it, a discernible agenda.
So that's interesting. No agenda. Yeah, this is something that they always accuse Democrats of being guilty of, but they clearly have no agenda, because I really believe on some level these guys have made a fortune, dude. They've made a fortune through legislation. They've made a fortune through pillaging. And they, on some level, certainly Dick Cheney, they don't care. They just don't care. And all these Republican legislators are sort of hanging in the lurch, which is great, wondering what the hell they're supposed to do.
Well, see, they thought they came out of last November's election with a solid block, a Republican president, a Republican House of Representatives, a Republican Senate.
Mm.
And what they found is that due in some small measure to the Democrats, but in large measure to fissures within their own party, they have not been able to move much. I mean, they moved bankruptcy, they moved some of these other things, but other than that, they have not been able to move the big policy agendas of the Bush administration, and they've got the war in Iraq hanging over their heads. You know, there's this thing, Mark, that says how much is being spent on the war in Iraq to date, and if you subtract that out of the American economy, which most people are not doing in the media yet, You're seeing that the economy is stagnating because of these policies, because of Iraq, and because the Bush administration has paid no attention whatsoever to oil prices, education, or any of the other bread and butter issues that concern the American people.
Yeah, well, we got to keep, the thing is that now that these key GOP cats have come out and they're presenting this new Social Security, idea, I guess, it doesn't mean that the issue of Social Security is dead, but this one is not much different, I don't think. It seems to me that on Social Security, what's happened is that a few panicky Key House Republicans, they're refusing to mention private accounts and instead call them investment accounts.
Yeah.
And I guess the difference is that the money comes out of the Social Security surplus,
yes,
which is now used to fund other stuff, as opposed to Bush's plan of just diverting money from payroll taxes into the pockets of investment bankers.
Call it fear. That's what it is. When you said panicky GOP House people, that's what's driving all of this. They know that Bush's Social Security plan will not wash. They're scared to death, unlike Bush, that they're going to have to compete next year against exercised Democratic Party that may be out to cop some seats. So now they're trying to come up with something, anything that will mollify the American people short of these midterm elections next year.
Let's talk to Steve in Boston. Hey, Steve, quickly, what do you got?
Hey, Steve.
My only comment, morning, guys, is that progressives need to not get too celebratory about this victory over this bad Social Security plan. It didn't have a real good chance of passing from the beginning. It
missed
the polls from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
What progressives need to do is go on the offensive, make the Republicans defend the whole concept of why they, touted that there was a crisis when there was no crisis.
Good plan.
The message from progressives needs to be, we've been telling you all along, there's no crisis.
Right.
If you want to address Social Security and fix it for the next 100 years, then let's raise the ceiling to 120,000 instead of 90,000.
There you go.
100,000 instead of 90,000. But, don't believe what's coming out of the Republican Party because they're crisis
models. Gotta go, Steve. Thanks a lot. There is no crisis. You're absolutely right. Thank you for your call. When we come back, we're going to connect some dots.
Yeah.
Iraq, Afghanistan, Korea. We're going to get into a little more Boltonisms.
Oh, Bolton, dirty business. Dirty business next on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Also coming out of the British press. Where is the American press?
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Sarah America Radio's Morning Sedition program. You want a snap pee, Kalo? Did you get one? You got a snap pee?
Yes, I did.
Okay, buddy.
I'm taking some more.
All right, yeah, I have a couple more. Hey, I'm gonna go visit Randy Rhodes this afternoon for a couple minutes just to talk about our big live broadcast tomorrow from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn at Union Street and 7th Avenue. That's the Union Street and 7th Avenue Tea Lounge. That's going to be tomorrow morning, Friday, from 6 to 9 a.m. We're going to have some free coffee. We're going to have some giveaways. We're going to be joined by DMC of Run DMC. We're going to be joined by New York City Council Speaker Gifford Miller, who I hope is not sort of like, no, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to do.
No. Gifford Miller's got a purpose for everything. Trust
me. Good. All right. Yeah, you know the cat. I don't know him. I like his name, and I'm looking forward to meeting him. I will be at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey on Saturday night, this Saturday, June 25th. We're going to be giving some tickets away to that. You can go to bananascomedyclub.com to purchase tickets. Also, folks, please, we're raising money to send inner-city kids to summer camp. You can change the life of a kid in the South Bronx. $35 sponsors a morning hike for 15 kids. $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids. $350 sponsors 1 week at camp for an entire child. Go to morningsedition.com and click on Camp Air America for details. My mom did it.
Yeah.
I did it. You should do it. Hey, I'm looking forward to tomorrow. We're going to be talking. Finally, Bill O'Reilly gave us some props. We'll get into that in a little bit. Bolton is angry.
Dirty.
Very angry.
Dirty. Bottom of the shoe.
You're
dirty.
Excited about this. Riley did some investigating this morning. But right now, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what they're saying. So thank God we got this dumb machine that we got to pack up today and bring to Brooklyn. It's the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's feed it some headlines. Of course, Brendan P.W. McDonald will be doing that live tomorrow at the Tea Lounge in Brooklyn. That is the Union Street 7th Avenue one.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go from the New York Times. House backs ban on flag burning. House backs ban on flag burning. Translation. Flag protected, Constitution sprayed with lighter fluid. Yay! How about this one? From CNN, SUVs improve in rollover tests. SUVs improve in rollover tests. Translation, SUV drivers still considered obnoxious at any speed. From New York One, Robert De Niro's housekeeper charged with grand larceny. $95,000 earrings.
95 G's.
Who the hell has $95,000 earrings?
Robert De Niro.
But that, I mean, am I an idiot, or does something about you make you go like $95,000 earrings? I could spend that money so much better.
Yeah, you're
but
right.
I guess if you got to lay around, it must be nice to be like, sure, you want those? No problem. $95,000 here.
Yeah, no problem.
They look
I
good
love
on you.
You.
Don't lose them. I bought my wife like a few. I got her some diamond earrings that only cost a few hundred dollars, and you know she freaks out if she doesn't know where they are. $95,000 earrings with my wife,
and
I don't
the maid
know about
took
that.
Them allegedly.
Oh my God! Let's feed the headline in. Like from New York One, Robert De Niro's housekeeper charged with grand larceny. Translation. Here we go. Script goes into development. Rob the Fockers. Okay. All right, here we go. So we're going to get into this a little bit. This blew me away. A report by Democratic Representative Henry Waxman of California said in the week before the handover of power to the interim government of Iraq, June 28, 2004, the U.S.-led Coalition Provisional Authority ordered the immediate delivery of $4 billion in Iraq funds from the U.S. Federal Reserve Bank in New York. Now, we all know and heard about the missing $8.8 billion. One single shipment of $2.4 billion was the largest movement of cash in the bank's history. How do you want that? 20s? 10s? $2.4 billion in a large duffel bag with friends of the neocon death cult on the luggage tag. The money came from the Development Fund for Iraq, which succeeded the U.N. Oil for Food program, which these guys had the nerve of suspecting was corrupt. And then, like, they just plundered what was left before the Iraqis could decide for themselves what to do with the money. This is unbelievable. Cash was loaded onto giant pallets, and I don't even know what a pallet is, right?
A pallet is like one of those flat things that you use a forklift to...
Yeah. I looked it up. It's one of those wooden things.
Yeah, wooden
things. And it was paid out to contractors who carried away in duffel bags bricks of American cash. All right, and of course the report says there was little to no scrutiny. There was no management of the dough. The U.S. Special Investigator General for Iraq Reconstruction said U.S. auditors could not account for $8.8 billion. We knew about that, but this is unbelievable to me. It's just a free for all. They're throwing bricks of cash around to guys that have been hired by the neocon death cult to do this work. They just plundered the place. If you were to look at that on tape. Just like guys open up duffel bags with bricks of $100,000. Here, catch, dude. Here, throw that in your Jeep.
You think this was in Jersey, wouldn't you?
Right.
That's where contractors get duffel bags full of money.
Exactly. And the fact that this money was put aside for Iraq redevelopment, you know, and that this is what happened just before the Iraqis might have had a chance of getting their hands on the money for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like that would ever happen. These guys intentionally, the day before, or the week before, days before, were like, dude, let's get that money out here. Let's get it going. Let's get it to our subsidiaries. Let's get it to our contractors.
Now, let's connect a couple of dots here.
Right.
You remember not that long ago when the United States transferred money out of the rebuilding of Iraq's infrastructure to some other kind of vague purpose?
Yep.
Well, suppose this money had actually gone for the infrastructure repair that still, by the way, has not happened in Iraq.
Where is this money? And the amazing thing to me is that here we are. We all want the troops to be brought home safely. You know, some Democrats want a timetable for an exit strategy. Some people don't. They don't know really how to handle that. And we constantly say that the neocon death cult did not have a plan going in. Well, they did. They had a plan. Their plan was to pillage this money. You know, billions of dollars. There's $8.8 billion missing. And all these military contracts of like, you know, billions, multi-billions, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars went into the pockets of cronies of the Bush administration. Fine, they were military contractors, whatever. But that was their plan.
But see, now
if they're pressed to exit, Riley, they can go, it's a win-win situation. Sure, we'll leave. We made a fortune. We don't care.
But here's the question. If all this money's missing, how come nobody's been locked up? Money is not supposed to just disappear into thin air. $8.8 billion? Do people have any idea how much that is in cash?
There's no receipt. They're duffel bags. What do you think? They were signing out with, you know, withdrawal forms? You know what I mean?
We know who the contractors were. At least we should. Or did the Coalition Provisional Authority simply, you know, hand out slips of anonymous...
Yeah, I think I saw Joe. He got a duffel bag, but I don't know what was in it.
Tony Soprano? Oh,
yeah,
no,
exactly.
I'm sorry. That was Waste Management.
And outside,
that's not contracting.
Right. In a related story, you know, outside of just getting the $30 million decorating deal for Gitmo, Kellogg Brown and Root, the Halliburton subsidiary, might have built Gitmo in the first place into what it is today. In a Department of Defense deal that was cut when Dick Cheney was still at the helm of Halliburton and in 2000.
Yeah.
I guess the deal wasn't officially inked until 2002, and it was an extension of a deal put in place by Clinton, which was used to repair bases after breakwater and typhoon damage. But after Afghanistan, the deal was broadened. The original deal for Gitmo was $75 million for Kellogg Brown Root. In 2000, that blew up to $136 million. And in 2004, $58 million went into Gitmo, and then the other 30 just last week. Now, this is $5.5 billion in contracts in Iraq with Kellogg Brown Root. That's Halliburton. And it's still questionable. It's questionable that when I see a story like this, that Cheney was at the helm when this deal was considered. Did they have that kind of foresight? Of course they knew they were going in for Iraq, but could they have known that they were going to be using Gitmo for this process? I don't know.
I don't know. I do know this. They knew they would make a profit off of Gitmo. They knew that the original cost estimates were probably low. I mean, that seems to be a quid pro quo. Not a quid pro quo. It seems to be a given of contracting, that you come in at one amount, and the next thing you know, it's double the amount. Okay, fine, we'll pay.
And how much foresight do they have in the evil realm of maintaining an enemy to profit? You know, it's like if this is true about Iraq, that they just plundered this money that was supposed to go into Iraq reconstruction, they put it into, you know, their corporate cronies. Now you've got Afghanistan, which is not, which is heating up again. The Taliban has resurrected itself. It, you know, it was engaged in a battle 2 days ago, you know, with American forces. Two copters were hit by gunfire, and five American soldiers are injured. So that's still going on. And we do know that the heroin business in Afghanistan has never been better. So that's billions of dollars going into the black market economy. And then it makes me start to question, why are we stifling talks with North Korea? Is he thinking ahead? Like, we got to have one, we got to have an enemy at the end of this.
We have to have at least one axis of evil left. Otherwise, you got nothing.
But this spurring, the fear about North Korea has been, where are those, if they are a nuclear reality, which they are,
they can
sell those nukes to terrorists, they can bomb our coastline, and this guy is sort of an erratic character. For
yes,
sure,
he is.
This little dictator, Kim Jong-il.
Yeah, so, but you know, be careful, man, because now you give Bush ideas to go in and invade North Korea, which, of course, would be, at this point, a whole mess.
My fear is that he'll nuke North Korea. That's my fear, and let alone that South Korea is now, you know, petrified at this behavior of the neocon death cult in relation to North Korea, because they don't want any trouble, because they'd certainly be the first ones to take a hit.
Well, you know, it's interesting. There are talks that go on periodically between the North and South, and usually the nuclear stuff is not always the first thing on the table. They have a whole bunch of other issues that they have to work out between themselves.
Yeah, the line is here.
The line is here. No, over here. No. There are five soldiers on this side. But, you know, you pointed out something that's very important, Mark, in terms of this whole Afghanistan thing. Now, the one piece of good news you hear coming out of that whole region right now is that American forces apparently killed a bunch of Taliban, 70-some-odd Taliban or something like that, or 75 or 76 people that were supposedly insurgents.
Mm-hmm.
Now, notice how this happens. At the same time, all this bad news daily comes out of Iraq, 18 dead, 20 dead, 15 dead, 5 Marines dead.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got Afghanistan, and, yeah, a couple of helicopters went down, but the Americans went in and cleaned up. I saw the same kind of thing happen in Vietnam, where you get into this whole diversionary body count thing. And we've had people on the air here before that talk about the fact, well, they cover the fact that the war is not really going well by announcing how many insurgents they end up killing every day.
First,
yes,
right. I get it. First and foremost. Well, look, coming up next, Bill O'Reilly finally gives Air America, you know, their props. We'll hear from him, and we're going to, you know, hear also. We're going to tell you why John Bolton is bad. Apparently, it's an issue that some people don't really know why he's bad.
Dirty.
Yeah. 45 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. Good morning. It's Thursday.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
800-297-3019. That's 800-297-3019.
Any American that undermines that war with our soldiers in the field or undermines the war on terror with 3,000 dead on 9/11 is a traitor. So, all those clowns over at the liberal radio network, we could incarcerate them immediately. Will you have that done, please? Send over the FBI and just put them in chains? Because they, you know, they're undermining everything. And they don't care. Couldn't care less.
Finally, we're undermining everything. 50 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Finally, we're having some effect at undermining everything, which was our goal, Riley.
Well, that was my cousin Bill, you know.
Right. O'Reilly.
O'Reilly.
Hey, look, you know, we've been poking around the blogs, and we found that there was some concern as to whether or not what's going on in the Senate on behalf of the Senate Democrats, Joe Biden being actually a good politician in fighting the Bolton nomination and demanding information. What we're finding is that some people think that this is just sort of an in-house Senate deal, that the reason that the Democrats are looking good is that they're fighting for senatorial freedom, that they want to respect the ability for senators to get the information they want. But I think people should know, if they have forgotten, that Bolton is a bad guy, and here's why. Actually, he left some messages on our answering machine. It might be because we've been trying to get this out to people. First of all, he skews intelligence. He pushed the Niger uranium story even though it was rejected by the State Department and CIA analysts. He claimed that Cuba and Syria were working on biological weapons even though he had no evidence, further discrediting U.S. warnings and intelligence on weapons of mass destruction. He sought to replace two intelligence analysts that wouldn't back his false claims on Cuba's weapons of mass destruction program. He tried to force Mohammed El-Baradei,
yes,
the director general of the International Atomic Energy Agency, to retire for questioning American intelligence on Iraq and Iran's weapons of mass destruction programs. He asked the National Security Agency for details of secretly recorded communications of 10 U.S. officials, which is your new beef.
Mm-hmm.
What is that all about?
Look, there's some dirty business going on here. Mark Maron, if you were on the southbound lane of the Jersey Turnpike and pulled up to the back of a flatbed truck to buy you a flat-screen TV,
mm-hmm,
would you assume that that TV was a legitimate purchase on your part?
No.
No. You'd think, like, maybe I'm getting a real good deal, and then they only sold it to you for $50. Mm-hmm. I forgot to add that.
Okay.
Okay. You are receiving stolen property at that point. You would be subject to a criminal offense. It is a gray area, apparently, as to whether or not the National Security Agency is legally able to intercept phone conversations of Americans. However, in April of 2000... Lieutenant General Michael Hayden, who was the then head of the NSA, he's now Negroponte's big deputy, number one deputy, said the agency may only target the communications of U.S. persons within the United States after obtaining a federal court order suggesting that the individual might be an agent of a foreign power. In cases where the NSA wishes to conduct electronic surveillance on U.S. persons overseas, the agency must first obtain approval of the Attorney General, who must have probable cause to believe that the individual is an agent of a foreign power or a spy, terrorist, saboteur, or someone who aids and abets them. Now, this is important because no one has argued that these NSA intercepts, of which Bolton got 10, he requested 10, got 10.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody said these were agents of foreign powers. And in fact, we don't even know who they were because the White House won't tell us.
All right, so there might be some foul play there. It's a gray area.
Did John Bolton think that these intercepts that he was getting were perfectly legal?
Yeah,
as an undersecretary of State?
Well, maybe if the Senate gets the information, we'll get the answer to that.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Also, he's got interpersonal problems. While working with the Justice Department in the 80s, he threatened a woman who needed maternity leave for health reasons. He angrily chased Melody Townsend, a Dallas businesswoman, through a hallway in a Moscow hotel 10 years ago in a dispute over a government contract. The guy is a hothead.
Yeah.
And he's been leaving messages on the Morning Sedition answering machine.
Uh-oh.
Okay, and you know that machine. It cuts people off constantly. We've had problems with it before.
Uh-oh.
Kalo, can we hear that first message?
Hello, yes. This is John Bolton. I normally don't call in to talk radio programs, but I felt compelled to air my grievances with your coverage of my nomination process. I feel the mainstream media has mischaracterized me through a series of unfounded smears and outright lies. And although I appreciate your candor and passion, the way you conduct yourself regarding my personal matters is...
Next message.
See, he got cut off because that thing, it's, I don't know why it does that. I maybe it's broken, but we do have, he kept calling. Yes, he did. So it's, can we hear the rest from Chris?
Before I was so rudely interrupted, I was in the middle of complimenting you for your candor and passion. But now I see how you really operate. In fact, your inability to listen to the other side of the story is quite indicative of the bureaucratic process at the United Nations.
And that
is exactly why I am going to become ambassador, and you can't stop me.
No.
Do you hear me? I'm talking to you.
Next message.
Okay, what's your name? Who am I talking to here? Machine! Bolton is getting mad! Air America? What the f*** is Air America? I used to work in the State Department! Do not f*** with the Bolton! The Bolton will feed you your ass! Do you hear me? Do not disrespect Bolton!
Next message.
Oh, no.
Bolton is tired of your bulls! The Bolton made his bones while you were still f***ing patchouli reeking heavy girls after pro-choice marches! I know where you live, Merritt! And don't f***ing laugh, Riley! I know where your kid's school is! I am Bolton!
Next message. Next message.
Hey, Bolton, don't talk about my kid, pal.
Man, I don't think he's the right choice.
I'm not sure he is.
Never mind
the rest of that stuff.
Oh, boy. We're going to be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn, tomorrow morning at Union Street and 7th Avenue. That's the Union Street and 7th Avenue Tea Lounge. And that's tomorrow morning. We're going to have free coffee, some giveaways. Plus, we're going to be joined by a DMC of Run DMC fame, New York City Council Speaker.
Gifford Miller
is coming down. It's like we're campaigning for him.
Yeah, really.
But, see how things snowball, man? I'm going to be on Randy Rhodes later this afternoon for a segment or two. And coming up, we've got, we're going to have the, we got the Cliff Notes. We've got Sammy the Stem Cell.
Oh, no, not him again.
And we're going to give away tickets to see me at Bananas in Hasbro. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians, lurking conservatives, dearly beloved. It's 6 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. We are here to, we're gathered here to mourn the passing of the Bush Social Security Plan. It has been ill for months, so it was no surprise. It was bound to happen. And after yesterday's announcement of a new irrelevant Social Security Plan presented by some key Republican members of the House, it has become clear that Bush's Social Security plan is no longer with us and will no longer need Social Security, so to speak. You get it? The plan's dead, so it's not going to get old.
Hey!
So it's a celebration here. Of course, we're going to stay on top of it, because, as I said, there is a new plan that is not using the word private accounts, but instead uses the word investment accounts. The difference being that the money comes out of the Social Security surplus, which is now being used to fund other stuff, God knows what, as opposed to Bush's plan of diverting money from payroll taxes into the pocket of investment bankers.
Yeah.
There you go. It died, and we helped.
Yes.
Yes. I think it's a wonderful thing. I want to apologize to people who are still listening from before, because I give a bad time check, which screws people up. I said it was 42 past the hour when it's 57 past the hour, because I was looking at the seconds.
Uh-oh.
So, you know, some people are like, oh, good, another 10 minutes of sleep. And now they're going, what the? How come he said, oh, my God?
Oh, boy.
Am I wrong?
Well, you'll be all right.
I'm sure I'll be all right. Will they get to work is the big question. Hey, if you're just tuning in, here are the few highlights from what we talked about on the program already. It's time for today's Morning's Edition Cliff Notes. The Bush administration spurned a deal with North Korea in 2002 while preparing for the Iraq invasion. In 75 years, historians will say Bush stood tall against North Korea. Of course, those historians will be mutant cockroach humans trying to get through another nuclear winter by cannibalizing each other. After a number of political setbacks, President Bush and Senate Republicans regrouped at a White House luncheon. It was the first time since the Reagan administration that the Senate Republican caucus held a policy luncheon at the White House with the president. And that one was the vote on ignoring AIDS. So, you know, this has to have been bugging him. A study finds that married men earn more if wives stay at home and do the chores. Don't want to be bothered with marital sex? Just drop this statistic on your wife and your problems are over. You can marry a woman who doesn't have a job and make an extra 3%, or marry one who does have a job and make an extra 100%. By the way, our writers have a question. What if you don't have any chores at all and just live in a stinking pile of garbage? How much extra money can you make then? Huh? How about that? Those are your Morning's Edition Cliff Notes for today. Moving on into the stories here in a second. I want to say that we're going to be giving away tickets to see me on Saturday night at Bananas in Hasbrook, New Jersey. Hasbrook Heights.
Yeah, don't forget
New
the
Jersey.
Heights.
You can go to bananascomedyclub.com or you can hang out here and we're going to have a little contest in a second. Ooh. So dig this, Riley. Randall Terry, the founder of one of the original Christo Fascist Zombie Brigade units, Operation Rescue, said that there would be hell to pay if Terry Schiavo was allowed to die. And now, Riley?
He's moving up.
There is hell to pay. He's running for Florida State Senate.
Yeah, he's right. You know, are all of these guys now, the religious zealots, have they all decided to go into politics? You've got Ralph Reed deciding to run or contemplating a run for lieutenant governor of Georgia. Now you've got Randall Terry. Are they, like, abandoning their anti-abortion?
Well, he's pretty high profile for a guy to, you know, go into the local or into the state Senate. But that was always the plan of the Christo Fascist Zombie Brigades, was to get operatives into local governments, into school boards, into mayoral positions. I mean, they're all over the place. So this is not a surprise. He's just fairly high profile, and I think state senator is a little higher profile than they usually take, especially for somebody of his renown.
Well, you know, what's interesting, it may be a surprise to some people, because the last time Randall Terry ran for office, it was not in Florida. It was in New York. In 1998, he lost the primary for Congress in New York. Right here.
How do you like that?
Hey, that man likes to keep busy, keep on the move.
I kind of vaguely remember that. Did he live here at the time, Riley?
Let's hope so. Although, technically, I guess he didn't have to live in the district.
Now, look, folks, if you were wondering what was going on in Afghanistan, I'll tell you what's going on. First of all, a U.S. spy plane, an Air Force U-2 spy plane involved in a mission in Afghanistan, crashed, killing the pilot. This is a sad reminder that we are still at war in Afghanistan.
Yes.
As indicated severely by a battle between Americans, security forces, and the Taliban. And that's right, the Taliban, folks. The Taliban is still fighting. How do you like that? And you brought up the point of insurgents' death being listed before any other casualties as being something reminiscent of Vietnam, Riley?
Well, yeah. And in this case, they're not even saying that they're definitely insurgents. They're calling them suspected rebels.
Uh-huh.
You see? So they're not. That covers just in case they hit a few innocent civilians. They can say, well, they're suspected of being down with the Taliban or supporting the Taliban or firing on U.S. troops. What they're doing is trying to throw out a little bit of good news as a diversion to, A, the fact that the Taliban has apparently reconstituted itself right under the nose of America and the Karzai government that America installed, and to divert attention from the fact that every day at least a dozen people are dying in Iraq.
Unbelievable. We're going to open the phones in a minute or two here, and you're going to have a chance to win a pair of tickets to see me in New Jersey at Bananas. Here's how we're going to do it. We're going to play a quick set of four sound bites of four different people in the neocon death cult, and you're going to have to tell us who they are in order. Simple, right?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Kayla, let's have it.
I think serving in this administration, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again,
and that tells a whale of a lot about our country.
Okay, you got it? Did you hear all four? Let's give it to him one more time.
I think serving in this administration, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again,
and that tells a whale of a lot about our country.
Wow, that's I'm trying to figure it out myself. All right, just be nice. Let's hear it one more time so I can see if I can do this.
I think serving in this administration, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again,
and that tells a whale of a lot about our country.
All right, the phone lines are now open. That's your, you got to figure out all four, who they are, which members of the neocon death cult. Phone lines are open now, 866-303-2270. We'll give a pair of tickets to the first caller to correctly identify all four sound bites in order. And you'll win a pair of tickets to see me.
Hey.
At Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey. Hey, come on. Come to New Jersey.
That's
and
right.
Hang out with me. This is Saturday at 8 p.m. Folks, also, tomorrow morning we're going to be at the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn at Union Street and 7th Avenue. That's 6 to 9 Friday morning. We're going to have free coffee. We're going to have tons of giveaways. We'll be joined by DMC of Run DMC fame, New York Council Speaker Gifford Miller. Will come. He's going to be there. You come down. You can touch Mark Riley. You can see Lawton Smalls. You can meet Cardinal Milford. You can see Dan Pashman. You can hear P.W. McDonald do the intro to the iNews live. So call in for that contest, folks. You want to do it one more time there, Taylor, or no? Yeah?
I think
serving in this administration, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again.
And that tells a whale of a lot about our country.
866-303-2270. We're going to take your calls. Coming up next, you're listening to Air America Radio's Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark. It is 14 past the hour.
Call us at 866.
Ha! That's awesome. Go on.
303.
Wow. Yes. Yes. I love it.
2270.
Oh, yeah. Drop the bomb. Drop it. There's not a dry eye in the house. Keep going.
That's 866-303-2270.
Okay. Well, just so you know, it was good, but I was also being pretty generous.
This is Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
1-888-33. Act now and we'll also send you a free 911 cell phone when you subscribe. 1-800-401-8833.
Definitely 18 past the hour. Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Definitely.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. We're in the middle of a contest. Hey, just so people can play along. We got a bunch of calls here. Where are you at, Chris? Can we hear that thing?
I think
serving in this administration, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again.
And that tells a whale of a lot about our country.
That's right. So who are those four voices from the neocon death cult? The winner who gets it will get to go to New Jersey,
right,
if they're not already in New Jersey, to see me perform on Saturday night in Hasbrook Heights at Bananas Comedy Club. Let's go to Omar in Westchester. Good morning, our friend Omar. How are you?
What's up, Omar?
What's up, Mark? Good morning. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. How you doing, man?
Okay. I really couldn't catch the first part because my boss called me in the other next step, but I'm going to give it my best.
We just played it again, man.
Oh, yeah, play one more time, David. I'll get it one time.
All right.
I think
serving in this administration, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again.
And that tells a whale of a lot about our country.
Okay, the last one is our all favorite Rumsfeld, the liar.
All right.
The second one is the poster boy, Scott McLean.
All right.
Scott McLean. I believe the third one is Bolton.
Oh. Oh, sorry, buddy.
I love you, baby.
All right, Omar. Good try. Robert, listening to WLIV in Manhattan. How are you, Robert?
Hey. Good morning, Mark and Mark.
How
nice to
doing?
Hear you.
Okay, first one is Darth Vader, Cheney. Second one is Scott McCallum. Third one is Bush. And the fourth one is Rumsfeld.
Hey. Yes, Robert in Manhattan, the big winner.
Winner, for a trip
to New Jersey on Saturday night to see me at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights. Thanks for winning, Robert. Let's hear it again, Chris. Just to make sure.
I think serving in this administration, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again.
And that tells a whale of a lot about our country.
Cheney, McClellan, Bush, and Rumsfeld. Good job, Robert. Stay on the line. They'll take care of you. They'll set you up.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, Robert.
Yeah, I think that one was too easy. We're going to do another one.
Another one?
Yeah.
Come on with it.
Yeah, let's do another one. Then we're going to have Sammy the Sun Cell come in. Do we have to? Yes.
Okay.
I know he's an ass. So we're going to do this other one, Chris? Here we go. Let's hear this one. Get these four neocon death cult voices right, and we got another set of tickets to Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey on Saturday night to see me.
I think the fact is
a Republican
threatens us all.
And that's still the case today.
Wow. Nice. Nice montage.
Whoa.
That sounded like a Pashman conglomeration there. So go ahead and guess that one. 866-303-2270. Give it to him one more time.
I think the fact is
a Republican
threatens us all.
And that's still the case today.
All right, 866-303-2270. Now, to help us out, to sort out some of the controversy surrounding stem cell research and whether or not Congress will provide more federal support, we have a special guest, Sammy the Stem Cell. Welcome, my friend.
Hi, I'm Sammy the Stem Cell.
Hi, Sammy.
Hi, Mark.
Okay.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing, buddy? Look, before we start, I think we should read an email complaint one of our listeners sent concerning you, Sammy.
All right, give me your best shot, Slick. Bring it on. It's go time.
Okay, here we go. It reads, quote, I am a librarian and I'm all about freedom of speech, but to give you a little feedback, the Sammy the Stem Cell bits are worse than offensive. They're just not that funny. They're just really adolescent. I feel embarrassed for you when I hear them. Not funny. Signed, Dina M. You have an answer for that, Sammy?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Whoops! I just heard someone in the kitchen with Dinah.
What the heck did that mean? That's all you have to say for yourself, Sammy?
Yeah. Look, lady! Look, lady, I'm trying to... Hey! I'm really bad! I mean... Try looking up my response in the I don't give a crap section of your local library.
Oh, no.
Adolescent, my ass. This is outrageous. I have a degree in art history, you know.
I didn't know that. You don't think that she has a valid point, though, Sammy?
No, look, you kale munching hippie.
Oh, man. Come on.
It's obvious this chick hates my freedom.
Oh, no.
But worst of all, Mark, she hates life.
Uh-huh.
I'm a unique, living, integrated human person. Don't forget that, you dumb heap.
Hey. I don't think it has anything to do with her hating freedom, Sammy. She has a right to... Wait a minute. Did you just call me a dumb heave?
No, that was Kalo.
No, you're a monster, man. A monster.
And you're welcome, Shylock.
Hey, wait a minute. Jeez, you are so disgusting. What is your problem? What the hell makes you tick?
I don't know. You know what? It's a long story, Mark, but maybe I can say it in a song.
Okay.
I'm Sammy the Stem Cell. I hope you never get well. I'm Sammy the Stem Cell. Hey, Mark.
What?
Go to hell.
Oh,
I'm Sacred Life. I did your wife.
Oh, no.
I'm Sammy the Stem Cell. Dum doodly dum dee doo. I'm Sammy the Stem Cell. Hey, Mark.
What?
You! Everybody! I'm Sacred Life! I did your wife! I'm Sammy the Stem Cell! Doodly-dum-dee-doo!
Doodly-dum-dee-doo!
Then shut up, Riley!
Hey! I never liked you.
So you think that...
That makes two of us.
Oh, boy. So you think that Congress is... Is going to vote to fund more stem cell research here, Sammy?
That's a good question, Mark.
Uh-huh.
So far, the bill has broad bipartisan support in the Senate, and they could vote it on it by next month. However, all indicators point to a veto by President Bush. It's an important story, and I'll keep you posted on it.
Wow, Sammy, that was sincere, straightforward, and completely devoid of vulgarity or insult. I'm proud of you, man.
Exactly the kind of crap I'd expect from a freak bag like you.
You know, you make me hate all stem cells.
Yeah.
Why don't you just leave, my friend?
Read my mind, a-hole. So long, Diplong.
You, man.
That's the horse you rode in on. You know what I said to you?
What?
Yeah, what I said to you?
Get out of here.
No, I'm out of here right now.
All right, we'll
I left 5 minutes ago.
You're the worst. It's just horrible. What a horrible thing that stem cell is.
Yeah.
So let's do this contest, 866-303-2270. Let's hear it again, Chris.
I think the fact is...
A Republican threatens us all.
And that's still the case today.
What do you got, folks? Are we going to do this? Are we going to do it when we come back? Yeah, okay. We're going to do it right now.
Uh-oh.
We're going to do it right now. So here we go. So let's take Jeff. Jeff, listening in Yonkers.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, Jeff.
Okay, what do you got, Jeff?
The first one, I think, is Elizabeth Dole, Arnold Schwarzenegger, John McCain, and Condoleezza Rice.
Sorry, buddy. Nice try. Edwin in New Jersey. Edwin.
Hey, Edwin.
Hey, Mark. How you doing?
Okay, right. Man. What do you got?
Okay, let's land this thing.
Okay, dude.
The first one is Laura Bush.
Uh-huh.
The second one is Arnold. Third one is McCain, and the fourth one is Condi.
That's Whoa! It. Laura Bush, Arnold Schwarzenegger, John McCain, and Condoleezza Rice. Good job, man. You're going to Bananas to see me on Saturday. Stay
All
on the,
right.
There you go.
Stay on the,
I always wanted to go to Jersey.
Aren't you in Jersey?
I think that's the point.
Stay on the line, Edwin. We'll set you up with those tickets.
Wow.
Let's hear it one more time, Kayla.
I think the fact is...
A Republican
threatens us all.
And that's still the case today.
There you go. There you go. Laura Arnold, McCain, and Condoleezza Rice.
You got to love Arnold's voice.
Yeah, really.
That's a hard one not to get.
Who is your daddy, and what does he do?
So, look, you know, coming up in a few minutes, we're going to have a legendary punk journalist, Legs McNeil, author of Please Kill Me, The Uncensored Oral History of Punk. Great book. Changed my life. Joins us in the studio to discuss the fate of CBGBs. His newest book is called The Other Hollywood, The Uncensored Oral History of the Porn Industry.
Uh-oh.
Hopefully after we talk about CBGBs, if we can, we'll get into the history of porn a little bit.
Ooh.
If we can do it tastefully.
And you know what else we got?
Yes.
Radio theater.
The new morning radio theater, the Temple of Doom, the search for the Antichrist.
Yes.
The next episode is with us. Legs McNeil is going to be with us. We're going to be in Brooklyn tomorrow at the T Lounge at Union and 7th. So stay with us here on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program with Mark and Mark at 27 past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Mainstream media, to the extent that they have any will to do that, they're afraid to challenge.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio.
The Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of Mark Maron and the Temple of Doom.
When we last left Mark and Grace, they were tied together in an empty abortion clinic as a bomb planted by Randall Terry ticked away.
This is the longest time bomb I've ever seen in my life. We've been tied up for 6 hours. Where's News Daddy?
Where's News Daddy, you ask? As a matter of fact, he's 20,000 light years from Earth, fighting an intergalactic battle against crime.
I'm looking for alien kingpin, Whack Whack Weehoo.
He's not here, but you can talk to his dark underworld, Sugar Smacks.
What up, funky spaceman?
I hear you and your oozing green homeboys are pushing kilos of high-grade squeak. Alpha Centauri is squeaked out, and I'm ending it right now.
You're pretty far out of your hood, News Daddy. Look around. Me and my boys are about to pump you full of protoplasm.
Your dope dealing days are over, you little green squeak freak.
I regard that as racist. Fire! You defeated us. We have never fought the likes of you before. What kind of creature cannot be hurt, cannot be shot, cannot be vanquished?
And look so funky fresh.
On News Daddy, get on board! The planet is about to blow!
Wayne Gilman.
Meanwhile, back where Mark and Grace are tied up at the abortion clinic.
Hello? We're still here. Grace, do you have any ideas? Grace, wake up! Grace!
Will Grace wake up in time to avoid being blown to pieces? Will we ever see News Daddy again? Or will he time travel back to the only age that matters, the age of disco? Do you remember this one? That's next week on Mark Maron and the Temple of Doom.
36 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Man, I got nervous there. I was saying some dirty words.
It's okay.
They're not dirty off air. You know what I mean? They're just fun words, but you can't say them on there. So, look, CBGB is one of the world's most renowned punk clubs where bands like the Ramones, Television, the Talking Heads, Patti Smith, and others earn their stripes is likely to close by the end of the summer. With Hilly Crystal, the owner of CBGB's, considering moving the club to Las Vegas, some are asking if anyone cares whether CBGB's lives or dies. Legs McNeil is the author of Please Kill Me, The Uncensored Oral History of Punk. Now the new book, The Other Hollywood, The Uncensored Oral History of the Porn Film Industry, is here in the studio to speculate about the future of punk and CBGB's. Good morning, Legs McNeil. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm glad you're on the show because I got to tell you, that first book that you wrote, The Oral History of Punk, Please Kill Me, I read it when did it come out? Like 9 years ago, 8 years ago?
Almost It will be 10 next year.
10 years. So I read it about 8 years ago, and I grew up during that thing, but I was always a Lou Reed fan, Iggy Pop fan, but I didn't know the history of New York punk. That thing changed my life. Because I had to go back and introduce myself to these bands that I had never known before, and I was, you know, and I did it all at once. I got all the records that were in the book. I just started listening to it, and I'm like, I lived that entire generation in the span of about 2 months. So thank you.
Well, you're entirely welcome.
Is there punk anymore? Let's be honest. I mean, these kids, listen to me. I'm an old man. These kids today seem like they're just doing a rehash of what your generation did.
Yeah, but I always say this, and I think it's valid, that, you know, some 13-year-old kids in the suburbs of Denver, mm-hmm. you know, with mohawks and green hair are probably having a great time, you know, screaming, you know, with potty mouth words,
sure.
you know.
Like we
and,
did on the break.
You know, right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I'm sure, so who am I to invalidate their experience? Now, do I actually want to listen to them? Probably not.
Okay.
And probably you don't. But they're having a great time. So what's wrong with that?
Nothing. I just feel like I listened to it once before, and I feel like for some reason, maybe it's a generational thing, that you know what came out of New York or what came out of CBGB's at that time was a crucible. There seemed to be like a real momentum, and there were things that were happening there that never happened before and probably haven't happened there in about 10 years. So in that respect, Is CBGB's, does it upset you that it might close? Do you think that it should close? Where are you at with that?
On a personal level, it upsets me that it might close because I like Hilly, and I'm, you know, I've mm-hmm. been known there all my life, mm-hmm. you know, since I was like 16, 17 years old.
Wow.
18. But I think Hilly's smart to go and open a a casino. And
he's moving into Vegas.
Well, I mean, don't you want to see a Joey Ramone slot machine?
Yeah, why not?
With some,
yeah.
you know, with all these hey, ladies with bro. Augmentated breasts, you know, putting money into the machine.
Yeah.
You know, that's
his voice saying, yeah. sucker.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that the, I mean, what other success, what would be more successful than having your own casino?
Yeah, I guess that's right. Too bad Joey won't be around to appreciate it.
Well,
but, you know.
None of us will.
I got to tell you, though, Legs McNeil, I, you know, CBGB's possibly closing. And I've been there a few times. I've been there to see some showcases of the Black Rock Coalition that did some shows there. But one of the things that would trouble me about this is it just seems to be part and parcel of this, for want of a better term, starbucking of New York.
Well, you know, that happened 20 years ago.
I know. I tried to
talking about
it.
The starbucking America in 2005 is kind of late, don't mm-hmm. you think? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a huge glass tower on Cooper Square, you know?
I know.
That just came out of nowhere, dude. I mean, did that go up overnight?
Yeah, and they're like asking $1.6 million for, you know, it's ridiculous.
And you can see CBGBs from there.
Yes.
It's just right out your window.
Yeah, right.
That's part of what you're paying for.
Yeah, right.
You have a view of what used to be the heart of Manhattan.
Well, you know, as soon as they put up that model bar, you know, which is basically
the Bowery Bar?
Yeah, across the street from CBGB's. You know, CBGB's was doomed.
But, you know, when you were there, I mean, I don't know if people who don't live here can really picture, like, the bands that came out of there that became huge bands. Like, when you were writing, you wrote Punk Magazine,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And you sort of defined the New York punk scene in terms of words. What were some of the high points, the best moments that you had at CBGB's?
Every night.
Every night
was a different adventure. You
yeah.
know? It was a different fantasy.
Uh-huh.
It was great.
Yeah. And when you were there, when like people like Iggy Pop came into town, and when people like I guess the New York Dolls were regulars at CBGB's, right?
Yes, David Johansen.
There was
Johnny Thunders. Yeah.
But that kind of chaos I don't see that it exists in rock and roll because I think that, I don't know, am I getting old? I mean, are times that different? Or do you think that, as you said, that you may be a punk rocker?
No, I'm getting old.
All right.
You're still young.
All right, so you don't mind if CBGB's moves to Manhattan?
Well,
or
no,
moves
I
to,
think...
moves in Las Vegas.
Well, I think it would be great for Hilly,
yeah.
you know? And I think, well, I think they never wanted us.
Yeah.
You know, they never wanted us. You know, that's why we had to find this hole in the wall called CBGB's on the Bowery in the first place.
All right.
You know?
So what was it set up for it originally?
It was set up for country blues and bluegrass,
mm-hmm.
you know, and Richard Lloyd from television went in there and with Tom Verlaine, and Hilly said, "What kind of music do you play?" And they said,
yeah.
"What kind of music do you like?" And I said, "Bluegrass." And I said, "That's what we play." You know, so that's kind of the story of, you know, and Hilly was on the couch sleeping every night, you know, from his vodka and Fresca or whatever his horrible drink was. You know, basically, Hilly was great. You know,
yeah.
he passed out about before 11 every night so we could take over it.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
kind of like the, you know, the patients taking over the insane asylum.
I definitely understand that.
Yeah.
What was unique about CBGB? I mean, what was the sound system? Was it the acoustics? What was it that drew people and continued to draw folks for years and years after a lot of very storied clubs, Max's Kansas City and a bunch of other places, all closed down?
It does have one of the better sound systems in the city. And also, you could have sex in the bathrooms and take lots of drugs.
You know? Well, I've been to clubs that can do that.
Yeah, but now, I guess, all the plumbing kind of fell off the walls.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the urinals and the toilets, and, you know, now the bathrooms are...
So it's unsafe in a couple of ways.
Yes.
That's weird, because I still have that remnant from back in my partying days, that whenever I'm in a restaurant or a club and I go in and it's a single occupancy bathroom, I'm like, damn, I used to do drugs. This would be perfect. So now let's talk a little bit about the new book, because you've done, again, you've like with the old book, with the oral history of punk, you talked to everybody involved, or as many people that were alive as you could. Yes. And it seems that this book, which has taken you how many years to put together?
8 years.
8 years to put together the uncensored oral history of the porn film industry, the other Hollywood. We're talking to Legs McNeil, the author. Now, this is a much dirtier business than punk rock.
Yeah, which I was surprised to find out.
Really?
Well, there were so many murders.
In porn?
Yeah.
Like early on or all through?
All through. And it just keeps going and going.
Yeah. Was it mob-based murders?
No. Well, people suspected it. Like Sharon Snyder, who was a wife of of Ted Snyder,
who was
a reputed associate, known member of mobsters.
Right.
And he was shot 9 times by a... you know, machine gun. And, you know, everyone thought it was a mob hit, and it turned out it was his wife.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah. So but she got off, actually.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Knew how to handle a piece. Huh?
Yeah.
But this is weird, because the amazing thing about this, about the evolution of porn in this culture, is that, you know, this is something that started out on these loops.
Right.
And that you could only see in, I don't even know where you could see these loops, because it's beyond, it was before my time. And now this entire culture is really pornographied.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, there isn't anybody that doesn't have, you know, porn somewhere in their house, whether they know it or not.
Right.
And where do you start with this book?
Well, basically, we start with the Nudie Cuties and the exploitation films leading up to Deep Throat, and the book really starts with Deep Throat in 1972, which is the birth of the modern porn industry.
I saw that on Betamax.
That's how old you are.
When I guess I must have been 13 or 14, and my friend...
You're young.
My parents' friends had a copy of it, and their kid brought it over to my house, and man, what an afternoon that was.
Right. It's actually an awful movie. What was better was...
Really? A porn film? A bad film?
Yeah. But the Bill Oskos Mona... Uh-huh. Before that was actually better.
Oh, now I'm going to have to go back and look at it. And now I'm going to look at it as an esthete.
Yeah.
You talked to dozens of people in here. And you know, there's a
I talked to about 1,000.
1,000, okay. Yeah. There's a general feeling, I think, among some people that there was a golden age of porn that has passed. Did you get that sense from talking to these people?
Well, I had been the assistant director of a porn film in 1974 called Blow Dry.
Okay.
And so I witnessed this kind of golden age where everyone was having sex off camera as well as on camera. You know, because I used to have to wake up the actors and drive them to Hicksville, Long Island, to this mansion.
Uh-huh.
And everybody was having sex everywhere, except me.
Because you were the guy driving.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
I had to get them their coffees in the morning. And
so, I guess those days are certainly gone. And do you go through Plato's Retreat and the whole New York scene and all that stuff?
Yes, yeah.
The Al Goldstein stuff?
Yes, yes.
And now, porn now, can you just tell me, is it still mafia-based?
Not really, because when they passed the Pimper, it was against the law to actually make porn in Los Angeles until 1986, 87, when they passed the Hal Freeman decision, which they used to arrest you on pimping and pandering. See, the confusing thing about porn was it's always been legal to watch it, but... shipping it across state lines has been illegal, and at the actual making of the films, you know, filming people having sex has been illegal in most states.
Right.
So that kind of got cleared up in the 80s. And, you know, it's like once something becomes legal, all the corporations move in, and, you know, it's like prohibition, you know.
And now there's like, I mean, it makes billions of dollars a year. It's a huge, and there are actually, you know.
Well, it's always made billions of dollars a year, but now it goes into, you
who
know.
Makes it?
Yeah, right.
HBO and, and other major media companies that do it through hotel room porn and whatnot.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. So one last question before we finish this up. Now, why is it that there's hundreds, literally hundreds and hundreds of women that have passed through porn, yet there's seven guys? I mean,
that's different now with Viagra.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Viagra really changed the internet. They can get better looking guys.
I mean,
just give them some Viagra.
So that's done. Those are the old days. The dinosaurs like Jeremy and
Tom Byron
and Kevin West.
That's the only one I know.
Yeah, sure.
No, but those guys.
Jamie Gillis.
Those guys will always work because the guys on Viagra, what they do is they call them pop shots in the business.
Uh-huh.
Do you know?
Yeah.
So guys who can pop, you know, will always be a treasured resource.
So if you're looking to going into the business, that's coming from Legs McNeil. Be capable of doing a pop shot. The book is the Other Hollywood, the Uncensored Oral History of the Porn Film Industry, and the other book that changed my life, Please Kill Me, the Oral History of Punk Rock, is a great book. I'm looking forward to reading this one. Legs McNeil, thanks for being with us. It was great talking to you.
Thank you so much.
We will be back with Bill Nighy.
Yeah.
He's coming up next. You might know him. He was the actor who was in Love Actually.
Yeah.
He played the rock star, the aging rock star, and we got a lot more other stuff coming up, so stay with us. It's 48 past the hour, Mornings Edition, Air America Radio.
Just wake up. Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio. Thanks.
That's cabinet refacing from Sears Home Services. 1-800-828-1200. That's 1-800-828-1200.
Excellent. This is in that book. 53 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey!
And that's television, right? From Marky Moon. That was a great album, and we were just talking to Legs McNeil, and that is a lot about television and the oral history of punk. Please Kill Me. I'm telling you, that book changed my life. I just loved that book. Because if you read about your heroes, you know, if anything, you're like, oh my God! He was like that. I never realized what an ass Lou Reed was. Never realized it. And I love Lou Reed. I love the Velvet Underground. When I read that book, I'm like, oh, my God, this guy's almost unbearable. Look, folks, we'll be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn, at Union Street and 7th Avenue tomorrow morning. So come on down if you want. If you're in the area, we'll have free coffee. We have DMC from Run DMC. We've got the New York City Council Speaker, Gifford Miller. I don't even know. I hope he lives up to the hype. Yes.
He's practicing now.
I'm going to be on that Randy Rhoads show for a few minutes later in the afternoon. And also I'll be appearing at Bananas in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey on Saturday night, June 25th. If you want to come down, bananascomedyclub.com. Look, you know, we've been talking a little bit about this, but not a lot, about the Live 8 concert.
Yeah.
Now, there's a poll. This is in England. It's actually going to be in like 8 different places around the world, I guess, with a tremendous number of performers. But a majority of people polled on this in this poll by YouGov/Sky News, I guess it was taken in England, said that most people believe that the Live Aid concerts and the demonstrations that are planned around the Live Aid concerts will have absolutely no effect on tackling poverty in Africa. What do you think, Riley?
Well, first of all, that poll shows an overwhelming majority of Britons don't believe it's going to have any impact. I mean, only 16% think it's going to have any significant make any significant difference. Only 6% even think that the demonstrations that Bob Geldof has called for are going to make any difference.
But I'm sure they're all looking forward to the show.
Yeah.
And I think on some level that raising awareness of the problem is very important. I mean, you know, a lot of times having an effect economically is a tall order, but raising awareness and getting the word out there, as we do here on Air America every morning, about a number of things that people don't know about, it certainly stands for something.
Oh, yeah, it stands for something. And, you know, Geldof has taken a lot of shots. He took some shots from people who said they didn't have enough black artists on. I think he addressed that. You know, now they're saying it's not going to make any difference. Hey, he's doing it. He's doing something. He is trying to raise awareness. And if it has a little bit of impact, if it makes a little bit of change, it's worth doing.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
There's nothing more. During the Live Aid concerts, I that was where my contempt and hate for Phil Collins really congealed. You know, just that doofus, little cute Phil Collins guy. He's like, I'm flying on the Concorde and I'm playing at both concerts. Like, shut up. It's not about you. I can't stand that guy.
Was that the concert that he played with Led Zeppelin?
I think it is.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he played drums.
He ruined it.
Yeah, awful.
He ruined it. Look at Phil Collins sitting in Bonham's chair. What, are you kidding me? That Phil Collins is awful. And he's made up millions and millions of dollars. Him and Sting just sit around on mountains of money, counting their money, laughing at each other. That's all they do.
Coming up next, Phil Collins and Sting.
Screw them. I like the Police. I was listening to the Police the other day. I was like, what a great band. And then all of a sudden, you know, even Sting, like, I can understand that he's a good musician and he does some interesting stuff, but I just can't stand his dumb mug. I can't stand looking at him. Or Phil Collins.
Really? Is Phil Collins still recording? I mean,
hey, coming up, we got Bill Nighy, who's the girl in the cafe is on HBO, which is in conjunction with this big GA conference. It's interesting. It'd be interesting to talk to him about it.
Yeah.
He was also in Love Actually. He played that aging rock star, which was brilliant. This guy actually is making his break, and he's in his late 50s.
Fantastic.
Maybe early 50s. I don't know. We'll ask him. Maybe we won't ask him. Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Hey, folks, tomorrow, if you're in the Brooklyn area, come on down because we're going to be performing live at the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn at Union Street and 7th Avenue. That's Friday, tomorrow from 6 to 9 a.m. We'll have free coffee. We're going to have some giveaways. We're going to be joined by DMC of Run DMC fame, New York City Council Speaker
Gifford Miller,
who's running for mayor, is going to come by. I have no idea. You know him. I've never met him before. Took a liking to his name. Now he's got to live up to the hype of us singing his name in chorus. He's got no chance, though, does he? I mean, Bloomberg in the polls today, it looks like he's untouchable.
Well, look, you never say never in politics, Mark. 4 years ago, there was a candidate who had a 30-point lead and watched it evaporate. So you never know. But right now, he seems to be sitting in the driver's seat, that's for sure.
Yeah, in other news, man, it looks like that the Bush Social Security plan is dead. Good.
You got the sound of a body dropping?
I do have a sound of a body dropping.
There it is.
This was announced by the introduction of a new irrelevant plan crafted by panicky key House of Republicans that refused to mention private accounts and instead call them investment accounts. Apparently the new plan, which is not going to pass either, the difference is that the money comes out of the Social Security surplus, which is now being used to fund God knows what, and Bush's plan was diverting money from payroll taxes into the pockets of investment bankers. So I'd like to think we had something to do with that, but I think it's just America waking up to his BS.
Yeah.
So, Riley, you know, there's this new movie airing on HBO this Saturday at 8 p.m. called The Girl in the Cafe.
Yes.
It's a romantic comedy that takes place during, of all things, the G8 Summit, and it's written by a guy who knows a lot about romantic comedies, Richard Curtis. He wrote Four Weddings and a Funeral, Notting Hill, Bridget Jones's Diary, Love Actually. So he's definitely a romantic comedy expert. But what does he know about the G8 Summit? We have one of the film stars, Bill Nighy, in the studio here to tell us what the G8 Summit has to do with a romantic comedy. It's great that you're here, sir, because, Bill, I'm a new fan of yours. I feel a little odd because I didn't really know who you were until I saw Love Actually, where you played the aging rock star, and you stole that movie, my friend, and I'm really excited you're here.
Well, thank you kindly.
Now, Love Story against the G8 Summit is a very, it seems like a weird mixture. Could you tell us a little bit about how the film unfolds?
Yeah, it's slightly odd. There is a huge campaign all over the world called Make Poverty History, which is, and the idea, Bob Geldof, Bono, Richard Curtis, who wrote this film, lots of millions of other people are involved in order to try and prevent extreme poverty, the kind of poverty that really kills people.
Sure.
And it's a big lobbying campaign building up to the G8 summit, which is where the top seven leaders of the whole world meet. And this year, they happen to meet in Scotland, in the UK. So we over there see it as an opportunity that we can really lobby them and we can maybe influence the outcome. And the idea is to prevent a child dying every 3 seconds. A child currently dies every 3 seconds. 30,000 children die every day.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know this. I haven't suddenly become an expert on foreign affairs, nor have I suddenly gained greater access to my compassionate sensibility than anybody else. I just got lucky, and I got a job in a film with a great man called Richard Curtis. It's a great script and a beautiful part for me. And as you say, it is a legitimate piece of light entertainment, romantic comedy entertainment. We're not trying to, you know, get your attention under false pretenses and then have you say your prayers at the end. It's like a really,
right.
It's a rocker, it's a gas, it's a tender love story, it's a clumsy thing where you see a middle-aged knackered man, me, try and, you know, have some kind of tender exchange with him.
Knackered?
Knackered, that's an old English word. It means very, very tired.
Tired, yeah.
Knackered!
Yeah.
I'm a little knackered.
I'm married to a British woman. I know these words.
Oh, well, there you go. So he's comprehensively knackered,
uh-huh.
And he still tries to attempt some kind of tender exchange with this very young, beautiful woman, played by the wonderful and talented, and now she owes me money, Kelly MacDonald, who you may remember from Trainspotting and Gosford Park,
sure.
And other shows like
that. The character is, like, it's interesting, because like I said, you know, when I saw you in Love Actually playing the aging rock star, I mean, this role, this is a socially awkward guy.
Yeah.
Extremely. So
yeah.
It's like the extreme opposite of that character. You got a lot of range there, man.
Yeah, well, it was refreshing for me. I don't often get asked to play those kind of parts, and it's kind of very cool because it was good to explore that kind of thing. He's kind of isolated by his chronic self-consciousness.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's narrowed his life down because interchange with other people is so problematic for him that he just eliminated it altogether. So now he goes to the supermarket and gets dinners for one and watches wildlife programs on the TV.
Oh,
kind of sounds like me if I wasn't married.
Well, it sounds like me, actually. Yeah, quite. But, you know, for once in his life, he scares himself in a cafe. It's called The Girl in the Cafe.
Yeah.
And he meets this young woman. They have an accidental exchange because there's nowhere else to sit in the cafe. And then he scares the life out of himself by going back and saying, maybe you would like to come to lunch one day. And even scarier, she says yes.
You know, the whole idea that this would happen, that the romance would blossom, I guess, in the context of a G8 summit, I think might be a little difficult for most Americans to wrap their brains around, only because unless there's an anarchist revolution at one of them, Americans don't seem to pay a great deal of attention to G8 summits. They don't even pay a lot of attention in many instances to the idea of trying to, you know, alleviate poverty, alleviate starvation.
Yeah, well, you know, ever since your grandmother pointed to your plate and said, finish it, clean it up, because there are millions starving out there, we all have to deal with the idea that apparently the world is divided into two halves, and one is the lucky half and the other is the unlucky half, and you got lucky. And while one half of the world is kind of dying off and falling off away from the other half is sitting around worrying about their shoes.
Right.
You know? And I was born, I worry about my shoes like everybody else. As I say, I haven't suddenly become more compassionate than anyone else. If, for instance, if you saw this movie, if you stumbled on this movie and you were surfing with your remote and you stumbled upon it and you were blithely unaware of what its dual purpose was, you could enjoy this and receive this as a piece of just righteous major entertainment,
yeah.
and remain blissfully unaware of its other purpose. In a way, and if somebody asked you afterwards, you know, how was last night, you'd say, I saw this great movie on the TV. You wouldn't say it was this savage indictment of the way that the lucky half dismisses the unlucky half of the world. You'd say, I saw this really funky love story with this, and it was very funny, and every 2.5 minutes it made me laugh out loud. That's what you'd say. In the
but
same way, if you saw broadcast news,
yeah.
You wouldn't come away and somebody say, you saw broadcast news, how was that? You wouldn't say, well, I saw this savage indictment of the information industry. You wouldn't say that. You'd say, I saw a really groovy movie with William Hurt, and Albert Brooks was great.
With a subtle savage indictment of the
well, world. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the fact that, Richard Curtis is a romantic comedy writer, and he's dedicated a large part of his life, and indeed the last year, building up to this G8 in order to influence it. So maybe now, if it's only, you know, it's very difficult, as I think Tina Brown said, it's very difficult to get somebody's attention about something that's on page 27 of the agenda. If you can hand them a DVD and say, buy a sandwich and kick back and watch this, it makes it a whole lot easier. So
right.
People who are unaware of the G8 summit, take a look. The background is the G8 summit, but as I have to really stress, it's a really legitimate piece of romantic comedy entertainment.
We're talking to Bill Nye. The movie is The Girl in the Cafe. It's going to be on HBO on Saturday. At 8 p.m., you might know him from Love Actually, from Shaun of the Dead. That's Still Crazy. That's a great movie, too.
Thank you.
You were great in it. And now I'm just saying I'm a big fan.
Thank you very much. Thank you kindly.
Now, you say this is not a savage indictment, but there is a subtext, and it's set against something that's very serious. And the character in the film sees himself as one of the good guys.
Well, I don't think he sees himself particularly as anything. He sees himself as a worker amongst workers and as a man amongst men. He also sees himself, you know, he has, I mean, to put it mildly, he has self-image problems. You know, he doesn't see himself particularly as important or distinguished. But, yeah, he does believe in the work he does. He does believe that, you know, eight men on July the 8th in my country, eight men in one room could literally save hundreds of millions of lives. It's phone calls. There's nothing more complicated than that. You know, they can stop a child dying every 3 seconds. It's possible. All they have to do is make it happen. If it was happening on a different continent, may I suggest, nobody would give the time of day to any kind of plan that involved waiting for a few days. There's 30,000 a day. How many days do you want to wait? If 30,000 children died in Berlin or Paris or Rome or New York or London tomorrow, they would make the decision by the time they got out of the car to the reception desk at the hotel.
Absolutely.
The plan would be underway. There would be aeroplanes in the sky. Everything would be taken care of. Unfortunately, it's not happening on another continent. It's happening in Africa. And Africa has been an emergency for so long that people have become inured to it. They get used to eating their dinner whilst people die. We all do. Me too. Everybody. You know, why not?
Sure.
What else are you going to do? This is an opportunity, a real opportunity. People cleverer than me see it as a unique opportunity to actually change the world, the way the world is financially structured, so that you can actually, in effect, change the world.
So are you involved with the Live Aid concerts on the July 2nd?
There's one in Paris, in Rome, in Berlin, in Philadelphia, and in London. Simultaneous broadcast, as was 20 years ago with Live Aid. And all the major artists, The Who, are going to be there, and Paul McCartney in London, and Stevie Wonder, and Bon Jovi, and James Taylor, and Alicia Keys, and all kinds of people in Philadelphia, and all over Europe.
And Phil Collins will be performing at all of them.
Yes.
He's going to take his private Concorde and make the time to go to everyone.
They have a new plane that he's going to be testing. He's going to be flying the plane himself. He's going to get to Rome.
And playing drums on the plane.
He's going to play drums whilst operating the aircraft, and it's all going to be very groovy. And no, he won't be there.
Good.
It's the biggest, it's without question, and I don't have to exaggerate, it's the biggest rock concert the world has ever known. And it will be broadcast on, you know, all over the world, and on AOL you can catch it on your computer, not that I even understand what that means because I don't own one, but I'm sure by younger people, but that's a very groovy thing. So you can watch it on your laptop.
You don't own a computer, Bill?
Apparently, I don't own a computer. What do I own a computer? I mean, Jesus. This is my phone going off. This is England calling. It's my daughter.
Uh-oh.
Hello, baby. I'm live on air in New York, and I think I better talk to you at some other time.
At least you didn't have that crazy frog wrinkle.
I'll meet you later.
Okay. But wait, Dad, it's an emergency.
You've got me worried now. What did you have to say that?
No, don't be scared. I'm sure it was fine. She just called to say hi. That's what I'm going to say until the end of the interview. So, now, it seems to me that your career, I mean, you've been around for a while. You've done a lot of TV work and movie work, but it's taken off. That must be exciting at this point.
Yeah, everybody went crazy for a while, and I got kind of discovered at a late stage in the game.
Are you relieved?
I have yet to come to terms with it. No, it's been good. It's very, you know, people are great and people are nice. And I did a lot of work, and it all came out, and I sort of watched it happen, and it all came out one after the other, and it culminated in a Richard Curtis movie. And if you're in a Richard Curtis movie, you do tend to get a degree of attention that you don't get anywhere else.
And that's this film, The Girl in the Cafe?
The Girl in the Cafe, yes. Richard Curtis, stars myself and Kelly MacDonald.
That's Saturday at 8 p.m., so watch this. We've been talking to Bill Nye. It's been great talking to you. Thanks for coming.
Thanks a lot.
God bless you.
Up next, we've got Bill O'Reilly finally gives us the respect we deserve,
yeah.
Mark O'Reilly.
Yes.
Finally, and we're going to talk about the John Bolton and what an ass he is. So stay with us at 17 past the hour on Air America Radio.
From Monty Python, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition. They're not the Messiah, they're very naughty boys on Air America Radio.
800-554-9628. That's 800-554-9628. Call D&M Leasing at 800-554-9628 today.
Any American that undermines that war with our soldiers in the field or undermines the war on terror with 3,000 dead on 9/11 is a traitor. So, all those clowns over at the liberal radio network, we could incarcerate them immediately. Will you have that done, please? Send over the FBI and just put them in chains? Because they, you know, they're undermining everything. And they don't care. Couldn't care less.
22 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Third America Radio's Morning Tradition program. That was Bill O'Reilly on his radio program. Finally, you know, showing that we are having some effect. We are undermining everything, Mark Riley. Undermining everything.
Everything.
Just, well, you know, which needs to be done because the reality that he represents and the reality that he is speaking from needs to be undermined because it is not reality.
It is not reality. It is his own slightly twisted version of reality.
The whole rant was about the difference between dissent and being a traitor. You know, and he's just such a... an arrogant putz, but I like that he gives us the credit for undermining everything.
Everything.
Not just a couple of things, but everything, Riley.
9/11, the soldiers in Iraq, everything.
So let's talk about John Bolton because it's important. Because we've been poking around on the blogs a little bit, and it seems that there was a pulse out there that says that what's going on in the Senate in terms of his nomination, in terms of the Democrats showing some muscle, in terms of Joe Biden actually acting like a good politician and standing up for something, was too much, a little too inside in the sense that what they were really fighting for, it comes off to some people, is the Senate's right to access information, which they should have, but the implications of what I read was that this is sort of an inside fight for the Senate. I think there's still hope that this confirmation will go south, and I also think that maybe people don't know exactly what Bolton represents. Do we have time to go into this, or we should go into the calls right now, shouldn't we? Because Bolton, while working in the Justice Department in the 80s, he threatened a woman who needed a maternity leave. He's chased a businesswoman through hallways at a Moscow hotel 10 years ago in a dispute over a government contract, a real hothead. He's been calling Air America because he's pissed off at us or something. But he's definitely upset about the information we're putting out there. And you know our machine, it picks up and then cuts off. But there was a series of calls from John Bolton. Can we hear the first one, Chris?
Hello, yes. This is John Bolton. I normally don't call in to talk radio programs, but I felt compelled to air my grievances with your coverage of my nomination process.
Yeah.
I feel the mainstream media has mischaracterized me through a series of unfounded smears and outright lies. And although
and
I appreciate your candor and passion, the way you conduct yourself regarding my personal matters is...
Next message.
Oh, see, now cut him off. This always happens with this machine, but it gets worse. Let's hear the rest of these, Chris.
Before I was so rudely interrupted, I was in the middle of complimenting you for your candor and passion. But now I see how you really operate. In fact, your inability to listen to the other side of the story is quite indicative of the bureaucratic process at the United Nations, and that is exactly why I am going to become ambassador, and you can't stop me.
Mm-hmm.
Do you hear me? I'm talking to you.
Next message.
Oh, no.
Okay, what's your name? Who am I talking to here? machine! Bolton is getting mad! Air America? What the f*** is Air America? I used to work in the State Department! Do not f*** with the Bolton! The Bolton will feed you your ass! Do you hear me? Do not disrespect Bolton!
Next message.
Bolton is tired of your bullshit! The Bolton made his bones while you were still f***ing patchouli reeking heavy girls after pro-choice marches! I know where you live, Marin! And don't f***ing laugh, Riley! I know where your kid's school is! I am Bolton!
Next message. Next message.
Ooh, what a sad, sorry, dirty man he is.
Speaking of his tenure at the State Department as Undersecretary of State for Arms Control, North Korea produced enough weapons-grade plutonium to quadruple the size of its nuclear arsenal. He also helped block a plutonium agreement with Russia that could lead to the elimination of 70 tons of weapons-grade plutonium. Now that Bolton has left the process, an accord is almost complete. Dig that. Coming up, we've got Robert Greenwald, the documentary filmmaker behind Outfoxed and Uncovered, about, now he's taking on Walmart, right?
Yeah, one of our favorite subjects coming up next on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Our estate variation. Call American Life, 1-866-492-2500. That's 1-866-492-2500.
Yes, it's 50 past the hour. We're going to land this thing. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Yeah.
Dearly beloved, we are here to mourn the passing of the Bush Social Security Plan. It has been ill for months, so it was no surprise. It was bound to happen, and after yesterday's announcement of a new irrelevant Social Security Plan presented by some key Republican members of the House, it has become clear that Bush's Social Security Plan is no longer with us and will no longer need Social Security, so to speak, because it's dead. That's the plan. We need Social Security, but we need it to stay in relatively intact the way it is. Maybe, you know, add a little tax.
Are you trying to say somebody's trying to kill it?
Dude, these new Republicans, they come up with something. They've changed the language. They've changed the idea a little bit. But it's clear, and I'd like to think we were part of it, that Bush's Social Security plan is gone.
Knock wood.
And now this new one, basically it's a similar plan, but it doesn't mention private accounts.
No.
It doesn't mention crisis. Instead, it calls them investment accounts. And the difference is that the money comes out of the Social Security surplus, which is now being used for God knows what. And Bush's... And Bush's plan, you know, was, of course, diverting money from payroll taxes into the pockets of investment bankers. So hopefully that there's no crisis, is not in trouble. It will be fine without them tampering with it over time. We may do some correctional things, but nothing drastic.
Nothing drastic. And the Democrats on the Hill don't want to hear this new plan. They don't want to hear anything about it. As far as they're concerned, private accounts are private accounts. And if that's on the table, they're not on board.
Well, I'll tell you, the Republicans are panicking about a lot of things, it seems. It seems like there's been some effect. They had, on Tuesday, for the first time since the Reagan administration, the Senate Republican caucus held a policy luncheon at the White House, or should we say lack of or failing policy luncheon, given that the public, the Democratic leadership, and some GOP leaders are turning against the neocon death cult on Social Security, Iraq, John Bolton, and it has become clear that the neocons are just a cabal of greed that has no real concern for the working people of this country or the world. And now the Republicans, the other Republican legislatures, want to know what the they're supposed to do with midterms coming up.
Yeah, that's right, including that liberal from Nebraska, Chuck Hagel. Remember, the guy from PBS tried to paint him as a liberal.
Paid stooge who went out to get dirt on Bill Moyers, called Chuck Hagel
a liberal. Yeah,
what
right.
is that? So, folks, you know, before we land this thing, let's talk about tomorrow. Mark Reilly and I are going to be there in Brooklyn with the show at the Tea Lounge in Park Slope. That's at Union Street and 7th Avenue from 6 to 9 a.m. If you want to come down and touch Mark Reilly. If you want to come see DMC from Run DMC fame or Council Speaker Gifford Miller.
Yeah, oh, sorry.
That's all right. No, you didn't blow anything
sorry.
At all. He's running for mayor,
yeah.
Although he's got a very small chance with Bloomberg's polls numbers escalating out of the park.
Out of the stratosphere. Gifford Mills got 12.
Also, I will be on Randy Rhodes' show for a few minutes this afternoon to talk to Randy. I haven't talked to her in a while. Her and I are going to be doing the. Did you know we're going to be doing the narration to the DVD release of Left of the Dial?
You too?
Yeah.
God, who made that decision?
I know. Can you imagine the her and I just?
Yeah.
I'm wondering if I'm going to get a word in edgewise.
No me.
That. You know what I'm saying?
No me.
Exactly. We're raising money to send inner city kids to summer camp. You can change a kid's life in the South Bronx. If you send $35, it sponsors a morning hike for 15 kids. $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids, and $350 will sponsor an entire week at camp for an entire child. So go to morningsedition.com and click on Camp Air America for details. What else have I got to tell you? You know, I'm going to be in New Jersey at Hasbrook Heights, Bananas Comedy Club. That's Saturday night. We'll be giving some tickets away for that. And, you know, I'm feeling sort of weird about plugging myself so much.
Yeah, keep plugging yourself,
it'll be okay.
Man.
You come on down and we'll have a good time. We'll talk. You'll get to know me. God knows if you listen to this show, how much better can you know me? You know what I'm saying? How much better can you know me? So, Reilly.
Yes.
Is there anything you want to cover before we go?
Well,
Randall Terry. Randall Terry, founder of one of the original Christo fascist zombie brigades,
Operation Rescue,
who said that there would be hell to pay if Terry Schreiber was allowed to die. Now there is hell is here. He's running for Florida State Senate.
He's running for Florida State Senate against an incumbent Republican trying to say, well, he's too liberal.
Wow.
You notice how they keep going back to this he's too liberal theme to describe people in their own party?
Unbelievable.
That's what they're doing all over America.
I just think, and with Jeb Bush pandering to that religious fanatic base by opening an investigation or getting behind an investigation into, what Terry Schiavo collapsed from 15 years ago, heinous
exploitation. How low is that?
For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program before we go here. It's today's Morning's Edition Cliff Notes. The Bush administration spurned a deal with North Korea in 2002 while preparing for the Iraq invasion. North Korea resents being labeled an outpost of tyranny. Now administration officials have offered to soften their language to say that North Korea is involved in tyranny-related program activities.
Oh,
the White House spokesman said, if Bush goes to North Korea, at least he'll be able to accomplish something he wasn't able to accomplish in Iraq, finding weapons of mass destruction. After a number of political setbacks, President Bush and Senate Republicans regrouped at a White House luncheon. Bush said he hadn't been in a room with as many worried people since his last intervention. A study finds that married men earn more if wives stay at home and do the chores. I guess with their wives waiting for them at home, it gives men added incentive to work longer hours. Hello, how are you? Researcher Mark Taylor noted that the report would have been done 2 weeks sooner if his old lady would have ever done the damn laundry. Although married men earn more than single men, the report pointed out that single men don't have to spend as much time rolling their eyes.
Ooh.
Today's phrase.
Ooh.
It's true.
Oh, my head hurts.
Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Bush and the GOP are regrouping. This is just like what happened with the squid machines in the Matrix. Wake up, sheeple. They're the machines, and you're the batteries. You gave them the power, triple A-holes. Those are your Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Tomorrow morning.
T-Lounge.
Tomorrow morning in Brooklyn. T-Lounge at Union and 7th.
From 6 to 9 Eastern.
Be there, Riley. Good show today, buddy.
It's a great show. Enjoyable. We'll be at Brooklyn tomorrow. Have a good day.
You
enjoyable.
Too.
Like that.
Yeah,
Air America Radio.